Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani on IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for all of you today. My guest will be Dr. Campbell McBride. She's an expert in treating autism and other diseases with diet, and I'm really thrilled to have her on. But before she comes on, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the news, some events going on in the New York area, and of course, share with you my weekly recipe. So last night, Slow Food North Shore, the slow food chapter that I am co-chair of, we had a great event at Elijah Farm, which is a farm that actually works with young autistic adults in working in the fields, on the garden, and they have a wonderful CSA, and they have a wonderful communal space that they allowed Slow Food to take over last night. We had a farm tour, we had a potluck dinner, and it was just a wonderful time for all. We showed a short video on Terra Madre, which is the huge event that Slow Food hosts every other year in Turin, Italy. And this short video just really gives the feel of the beauty of the Slow Food movement and how being a member of Slow Food, you're actually a member of an international community working together to better the food in the world and to bring people together through food and cultures. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful evening. So check out our website or Facebook page and see some of the pictures from that. It was really wonderful. Today, there is a food waste fair down at the Brooklyn Navy Yard in Brooklyn. And this evening, they're having a zero food waste challenge, which I am hoping to go to at 6 o'clock. The fair is going on all day today from 10 to 6. And then at 6 o'clock at night, there is a food waste challenge, which is a bunch of different chefs making lots of food from things that normally would be thrown out. For instance, there's a slaw being made from the core of cauliflower and something with cauliflower leaves and, the leaves of beets and all different parts of vegetables. And I hope it's just vegetables. I think there might be one meat item as well. But things that are normally wasted, even if you're composting it, most of compost or most of our food waste goes into landfills where it's covered with plastic and really doesn't have access to the sun to really break down in a compostable way. And so it really sits there in the landfill, releasing methane into the atmosphere, which is really so much worse even than CO2. So, reducing food waste is a real, real important issue. And that's been in the news a lot lately. 40% of the food here in the U.S. actually is wasted. Sometimes it's wasted in the production level. Sometimes it's wasted in the home level. But either way, it's wasted, and it really could be feeding so many people. And when you think about food waste, it's not only the food you're wasting. It's all the resources that go into growing that food and producing that food that is also being wasted. So this is a great opportunity to learn how you can reduce your food waste and what we can do about it as a planet. So check that out. Food Tank, which is a nonprofit organization that I just love, that brings food tank summits to different cities around the country. And Danielle Nuremberg, who runs Food Tank, she's just a wealth of information. She's been doing podcasts now, which are really wonderful. But she is having Food Tank talks here in New York City and, again, in other cities across the country. The ones still coming up in New York are June 11th, June 16th, and August 13th. They'll take place at NYU Pless Hall from 7 to 9:30 in the evening. Tickets can be purchased on Eventbrite. It's just a reservation. I believe the events are free. So that's a wonderful thing to check out. And they will also be podcast. Click on and just listen in. So that's something to mark on your calendars. July 19th to the 26th is the food Slow Food Nations taking place in Denver, Colorado. And we talked about just a minute ago, Slow Food is a wonderful, wonderful organization that I think everyone should join and become a part of. It's a movement to really bring food awareness into everyone's life and make the connections between what we eat, how we feel, and the health of the planet. So Slow Food's a great organization, and this Slow Food Nations is a huge food gathering. They take over the city of Denver, and there's events going on all over the city. So that's worth going to. And then NOFA New York, the Northeast Organic Farming Association, the New York chapter having their gala. So I'd like to ask you all to save the date. I hope you can come. August 23rd up in Poughkeepsie, New York. It's going to be a great event. And we are looking for items for the silent auction and live auction as well. If you have anything you'd like to donate, please check in with that. I want to share with you that Nassau County just banned styrofoam, which is a big, big win for all of us here. So that's really wonderful. So I just wanted to celebrate that. I also wanted to ask you all to help protect Long Island's water. Last year, I was at SUNY Farmingdale when the State Environmental Conservation Committee had their open meeting, and there were so many fertilizing industry representatives there that they managed to convince the state legislators that we do not need to preserve and reduce the water-soluble fertilizer available here on Long Island. But we really do. Our water all comes from aquifers. The fertilizer that we put onto our lawns seeps down into those aquifers and also runs off into our water. And we need to reduce that. And so there is another opportunity. Senator Todd Kominsky is the chair of the Senate Environmental Conservation Committee. And New York State Assemblyman Steve Englebright is the chair of the Assembly's Environmental Conservation Committee. And I have phone numbers on my website for both of those gentlemen. And if you could call them and tell them that you really support them in passing this fertilizer legislation to limit the sales of water-soluble nitrogen on Long Island, that would be great. You know, I talk to all of us every year about the work that we do and how we all have to get involved and go beyond our normal work. Many of us have work that is really admirable and wonderful, and we add to the good of the world in the work that we do. And if that's our work, we're very fortunate. But in addition to that, we all have to go a step beyond and do something extra to help reverse the situation that's going on in on our planet and in our society. You need to find the issue that you are most passionate about and really get behind and do everything you can to make a difference, whether it's climate change, water protection, air protection, abortion rights, whatever you're passionate about. You need to become an activist, because without people, you know, rising to the occasion, becoming activists, we're really looking at a dire situation. So whatever you can do, that would be really wonderful. And what else? I guess that's it. At this point, I want to share with you my weekly recipe so that I can get Dr. Natasha Campbell on and talk to us about her books. So this week's recipe is a vegan chocolate mousse tart with banana and raspberry compote. This is really rich and delicious and very healthy. So the crust is made with 2 cups of macadamia nuts, 2 cups of raw almonds, 2 cups of dates, a pinch of sea salt, and a 1/2 cup of shredded coconut. And I just pulse that in the food processor till it's all very crumbly. And then I press it into a tart pan. And I press it really hard so that the crust is not too thick, especially when you get to the edges. You really want to press down at the corners so that you don't have a big fat piece of crust there. You really want a nice smooth edge from the bottom of the crust to the side wall of the tart pan. So you're going to press that in, and when I'm pressing it up the sides of the tart pan, I use my opposite thumb to press down so that I'm creating a nice even crust all the way around the tart pan. And for the filling, the chocolate filling is, I soaked 3 cups of cashews for a few hours in water. You want to soak them for like 3 hours. You can even soak them overnight. But you want to soak them for a while. So you need to plan this ahead. And then you need 2 cups of water, 1 can of organic coconut milk, 4 teaspoons of vanilla, 3 cups of cacao powder, 1.5 cups of agave, and a pinch of salt. And then for the mousse filling, you're going to drain the cashews. Then you can combine the drained cashews and the fresh water in a food processor and pulse that until it really starts breaking down and becomes very smooth. And then you're going to add the coconut milk to that and the vanilla and the pinch of salt and pulse that some more. At that point, at least my food processor is full. If you have a real big one, you might be able to fit it all in there, but I am not able to. So at that point, I took the completely smooth pulsed cashews that have been pureed with the coconut milk in the water. I poured that into a large bowl, and then I slowly whisked in the cacao powder and the agave into the bowl and mixed that up with a whisk. And when it was completely smooth, I added that to the tar pan. And you can taste that. I mean, some people like their chocolate a little bit more bitter. Some like it a little sweeter. So you can adjust the amount of agave. You can start with a little less and add more according to your taste. And that's the beauty of being the chef. You get to customize your recipes to your liking. Then once you put the chocolate into the crust, put that into the freezer for about an hour just so that that sets. Then you're going to make the banana filling, which is really just, I always put my ripe bananas, my bananas that are getting too ripe, I just automatically peel them and stick them in the freezer. And when I get a bunch, I want to make a recipe that uses them up. So I had 6 ripe bananas in my freezer that I pulled out. I pulsed them with 2 teaspoons of vanilla and 1/4 cup of agave. And I pulsed that, and then I put that on top of the layer of chocolate. And then right on top of that, I put the raspberry topping, which was this actually, I forgot to tell you that this recipe that I just told you is making 2 tart pans. Okay, so if you only are making 1, you would cut all of this in half. And this recipe is on my website, so you will find it there as well on the Progressive Radio Network's website. For the raspberry topping, you're going to do 1 package at a time, 1 package of 12 ounces of frozen organic raspberries, and you're going to mix that with 2 tablespoons of agave just to sweeten it slightly. And that, you don't want to pulse that till it's smooth. You really want to pulse it so that it's lots of little pellets of raspberries. And you put that on the top as the topping of the tart pan, and it's really delicious. And that is it. I'd love you all to make the recipe and give me some feedback. I love hearing from you all. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride. She's joining us from London via Skype, and I'm really thrilled to have her on to talk to us about her book and the work that she's been doing in developing the GAPS diet, which is the gut and psychology syndrome diet, and has been working in treating autism, ADHD, dyslexia, depression, and schizophrenia through this diet. So welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
Great.
So this is the radio, isn't it?
This is the radio, yes.
And, this is the radio.
And I will send you a link when this is over. You can share this with all of your circles of friends and community as well.
Okay.
So years ago,
thank you.
The chance of having a child with autism was 1 in 10,000. And in your book, which was written in 2010, you referred to 1 in 150. Now, in 2018, according to the Center for Disease Control in the U.S., 1 in 59 children are diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. And boys are 4 times more likely to be diagnosed with autism than girls. Can you explain the rise in children being born with autism, and why is it more prevalent with boys than girls?
Yes, it is underestimated, because now in the English-speaking countries, on average, we diagnose 1 child in 35.
Oh, really?
So that is a huge increase, and very rapid increase. And the researchers have already projected that line to 2020s. And between 20 and 25, they're predicting that we'll be diagnosing 1 child in 2.
I know. I have read
and
that.
The line is not going to stop there. Yes, that the line is not going to stop there. The other half of our children are not going to be healthy either, because they'll be suffering from ADHD, ADD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, oppositional defiant disorder, asthma, eczema, diabetes type 1, rheumatoid arthritis, all kinds of physical and mental illnesses. We're moving into a situation where there will be no healthy children at all. And of course, many people are asking, why is this happening? And this is not just autism. I started working with autism some 20 years ago. And very quickly, I've discovered that siblings of autistic children are not healthy either, and that their parents are not healthy either, that the whole family needed treating. And that illnesses that the whole family is suffering from come from the same root cause, from the same place, from the digestive system of the person. We all know, majority of people are aware of the fact that we have microbes living inside our digestive system. Well, recent research has discovered that 90% of all cells in the human body are in our gut flora, in that community of microbes that live inside our digestive system, 90%, which means that your body is only 10%. It's a shell, a habitat for this mass of microbes that live inside us. And it is a highly complex microbial world. The basis of it are fungi, and along the fungal growth, fungi can grow meters long, hyphae, protrusions. And this is like a roadwork inside the microbial community. And then along that roadwork, bacteria, viruses, protozoa, and various other creatures build their little homes, their little villages, their little towns. And then there are bigger creatures there, flukes and worms and other creatures that we call parasites. It's an extremely complex group of creatures that live together. And all of them are necessary. All of them are important, because all of them plant each other, harvest each other, eat each other, control each other. None of them are allowed to get out of control and start causing trouble, because every one of these microbes is capable of causing trouble. But as long as the harmony, the community is harmonious and everyone is in balance with each other, they bring masses of benefits to the human body. In fact, we could not survive without them. We could not live without them. But what happens in our modern world, since the discovery of antibiotics, since the appearance of industrial agriculture on the planet, industrial food production on the planet, chemical industry is very, very active, we have changed the environment in our world. And as we're damaging the soils on our planet, where the food is grown, at the same time, we are damaging the soils inside us. Because this gut flora that is inside your digestive system is the soil inside you. Because soil is a microbial community where a complete mixture of microbes live together. Healthy soil is a microbial community. Unfortunately, our industrial arable agriculture is turning soils on our planet into deserts at an unprecedented rate, growing plants for us to eat, growing crops for us to eat. Every time they dig, they destroy the structure of the soil, they destroy the fungal growths in the soil. Every time they apply chemicals, they destroy the microbes, they kill them. They destroy the humus in the soil, which is a carbon polymer. It is a concentrated source of carbon, one of the biggest sources of carbon on our planet. So our arable agriculture growing plants for us is the biggest source of global warming, because they release huge amounts of carbon into the atmosphere, destroying humus and turning, releasing carbon. Our digestive system, the gut flora inside us, is very similar to healthy soil. The more we're destroying soils on our planet, the more we're doing the same to the soils inside us. We now have generations of people with abnormal, unhealthy, destroyed gut flora. The soil inside our digestive systems is turning into deserts. And when the soil turns into desert, of course, the rest of the body cannot thrive. Because this microbial community, gut flora, takes part in appropriate digestion and absorption of food. Without them, we can't digest food properly and we can't absorb it properly. And we develop multiple nutritional deficiencies. You can be eating the best quality food in the world, but if your gut flora is unhealthy and unable to help you to digest it properly, that food will not benefit you. It will go right through you And a lot of that food will be converted into many toxic substances, downright poisonous chemicals by the microbes that overgrew in the gut flora, pathogenic microbes, and poison the rest of the body.
Can I ask you a question? Can I interrupt for a minute? Is all autistic children, are they? Is everyone being born already with this condition, or can this condition also be something that a child can develop after, you know, after time? You know, like some people say that, you know, their child became autistic after a vaccination, and we'll talk about that after.
Yes. But I have no doubt, based on my clinical experience, and many other doctors will agree with me, that almost 100% of our modern autistic children were born with perfectly normal brain. These were perfectly normal children. But these children acquired abnormal gut flora from their parents from day one, because the mother and the father passed their gut flora to the child at the moment of birth. When the baby goes through the birth canal, it swallows mouthfuls of microbes that live inside the birth canal of the mother. Where does the vaginal flora come from in a woman? From two places. One is her own bowel. So if she's got abnormal gut flora, then she will have abnormal flora in her vagina, and that's what she will be passing to her baby. And from the father. If the father has abnormal gut flora, that flora will populate his groin and all the organs there, and he shares that flora with the mother on a regular basis. That is how Mother Nature designed it. That's how our babies get their gut flora from both the mother and the father. If the child was born with a C-section, then the flora is more opportunistic. It comes from the hands of people who look after the child, from the nipples of breastfeeding mother, from the skin contact with other humans. And indeed, research shows that C-section babies have impoverished gut flora. The diversity is much lower in their gut flora than it is in the child who was born normally through vagina. So what we have here, we have an epidemic of abnormalities in the gut flora. Before I talk about the health of the child in my clinic, I always talk about the health of the parents and grandparents first. And a typical picture has evolved. If we had grandparents who were born just after the Second World War or around that time, and they acquired more or less normal gut flora from their parents, then in their life, they've been exposed to a few courses of antibiotics, which have damaged their gut flora slightly to a certain degree, and they passed that slightly damaged gut flora to their children. Then their children grew up in a very different world. They grew up in a world where antibiotics were given to us for every cough and sneeze, so that generation had lots of antibiotics. Secondly, junk food came onto the market, and the industrial agriculture flourished on the planet. Majority of agricultural chemicals that are used are antibiotics in their nature. So today, everything you buy from the supermarket that is produced by industrial agriculture has chemicals in it which are antibiotics. You're eating antibiotics. Whether you're eating plants or animal foods, it doesn't matter. You're eating antibiotics. So our gut flora has got seriously damaged. And then in that generation of youngsters, the girls were put on a contraceptive pill from the age of 15, 16, which has a devastating effect on the gut flora. And women are taking it for quite a few years before they're ready to start their family. And many other things happened. The planet just changed. The environment has changed. So this generation of young people, when they start their family, they are passing seriously damaged gut flora to their children. And this is the cause, this is GAPS, gut in psychology syndrome or gut in physiology syndrome. And this is the cause, the underlying cause of our epidemic of autism, ADHD, ADD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, oppositional defiant disorder, schizophrenia in children, epilepsy in children, diabetes type 1, rheumatoid arthritis, allergies, eczema, asthma, and the rest of it. And what I see in my clinical practice is that every year this situation is getting deeper and worse. Ladies who have given birth in the last 5 years to babies, even 5 years ago, their gut flora was slightly better of what they were passing to their child at the moment of birth. Today, it's much worse. This is like an avalanche coming upon humanity. It's getting worse and worse. And genetics are not involved at all in this process. This is just the parents passing their gut flora. What happens with these poor autistic children? They are born perfectly normal, with perfectly normal brain, perfectly normal little babies, but they acquire abnormal gut flora from their parents from day one. That abnormal gut flora damages the integrity of the gut wall of the child, making it porous and leaky. Literally holes develop in the gut wall. So the food doesn't get digested properly. It absorbs undigested. Plus the pathogenic flora in the child's digestive tract eats the food that comes along, converts it into a myriad of very poisonous chemicals. So the digestive system of the child, instead of being a source of nourishment for the child, becomes a major source of toxicity in the body. A river of toxins flows from the gut into the brain of the child and clogs the brain with toxicity. How does autism develop? You need to look at how babies learn, how the babies develop. They come into this world like little aliens. They need to learn everything. And in order to learn, they collect information from the environment by using their sensory organs. They listen to everything. They look at everybody. They touch everything. They take everything in their mouth. What are they doing? They're using their ears, their sight, their vision, their tactile sensitivity in their hands, their sense of smell, sense of taste, and other sensory organs to collect information from the environment. And then they pass that information to the brain to be processed. And from that information, the brain learns how to be a human being in this world. But if the brain is clogged with toxicity, it's unable to process that information appropriately. All that information coming from sensory organs turns into a noise, into a mush in the child's brain. And from that noise mush, the child cannot decipher anything useful. And as a result, the child develops in an autistic manner. They do not learn how to be a human being in this world. They do not learn how to copy other children. They do not learn what to do with toys, what to do with food, how to recognize human beings, how to speak, how to understand language, how to behave appropriately in different situations. If the mixture of toxicity is different coming from the gut and the whole situation, the gut flora is different, then the child may not become autistic but will become hyperactive or attention deficit disorder or dyslexic or dyspraxic or schizophrenic or bipolar or oppositional defiant. But majority of these children do not fit into any diagnostic box because every human being is unique. We all have unique gut flora. And every one of these children has a unique flow of toxicity from the gut coming to the brain. So majority of children, about 80%, have a little bit of autism, a bit of ADHD, a bit of ADD, a bit of something else and something else. And none of it fits into any diagnostic box. So with these children, pediatricians take a long time to give them a diagnosis. And precious time is being wasted when the child could have been saved. Because the longer this toxic situation goes on in the child's body, the more damage is inflicted upon the brain because this toxic river bombarding the brain causes physical damage to the brain. The immune system joins in with inflammation, with autoimmunity and other reactions, trying to deal with the whole toxic situation in the brain, causing even more damage to the whole situation. So the longer this process goes on, the more physical damage is inflicted upon the brain of the child. And the more the child falls behind their peers in their development, the longer they're stuck in this toxic fog, the longer they were not learning. Children learn certain skills at a certain age. We have to learn to walk when we're about one, to talk when we're about two, to start developing finer points of language in the third or fourth year. But if the child was stuck in a toxic fog at those particular moments in their development, they miss those points. It's very difficult for them to catch up with normally, typically developing 3, 4, 5, 6 year olds. In my clinical experience, children with autism under the age of 4, 5 can shake autism off completely. As long as we put the child on the GAPS nutritional protocol and under the age of 2, 2 and a half, many children recovered without any other intervention necessary, just the GAPS diet. But all the children have missed out too much on their development. So, and they're unable to then go back and catch up on those developmental milestones. We have to teach them, these children. Uh-huh. We have to teach them. Now, teach them intensively with applied behavior analysis. Mm-hmm. So autism is curable. As long as we catch the child young enough, when the brain is not physically damaged yet, and the child hasn't spent too long in that toxic fog and hasn't missed out on too much development. The same with all other disabilities.
They used to say that a diet for autism was, basically a gluten-free and casein-free diet. And then you actually took it further with your GAPS diet. Can you talk about why the gluten-free casein was not enough and what is involved in the GAPS diet?
When the gut flora is abnormal, all protein doesn't digest properly. It absorbs partially digested, partially broken down. Our human research has researched two proteins out of the full hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different proteins from food. They focused on two, non-gluten from grains and casein from milk. And they've researched them. And based on that research, this gluten casein-free diet was developed. Yes, removing two toxins out of the whole equation might be helpful, and it is helpful for quite a few children, but for many children it doesn't make any difference. Because all the other proteins are being misdigested, undigested, absorb undigested, and continue damaging the child. And gluten casein-free diet doesn't change the gut flora in the person, doesn't heal the gut wall, doesn't change the root cause of the disorder. Mm-hmm. Where GAPS diet is specifically designed to drive out pathogens from the gut, to reestablish normal, balanced, diverse gut flora, and to heal and seal the gut wall, close those holes in the gut wall. Once that happens, that river of toxicity flowing from the gut to the brain stops, and the brain cleans up. It takes a few weeks to do that, but the brain has a wonderful ability to clean itself. It cleanses itself, it removes all toxicity. And from that moment on, the child wakes up. The child comes out of this toxic fog. And from that moment, the child starts learning properly, appropriately. And if you teach the child intensively as well, so the child can catch up on all the milestones they've missed out while they were stuck in that toxic fog, then there is a real chance to come out of autism 100%. I have seen too many children, thousands of children who have recovered fully with the GAPS nutritional protocol from autism. All the children may not recover fully because they were trapped in that situation too long, but all of them improve. And it is impossible to predict to what degree the child will improve. Mm-hmm. Some children we think will be wonderful and they are very slow at developing. Other children look very, very severe and they go up like a rocket. And it's literally impossible.
That's so encouraging because so many doctors, I mean, you know, parent gets a diagnosis of your child is autistic and, you know, they feel like, I'm sorry, there's nothing you can do. And, you know, most doctors have no clue about nutrition and how food affects our health. They just ignore it, So, you know, I'm sure, you know, people who find you, it just sheds a whole new light and it must be so uplifting and encouraging. And I want to get into some of the particulars about the GAPS diet. But before we do that, we're going to take a couple minute break. And when we come back, then I'd love you to share with us a little bit about what that is. Okay? So don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
The Progressive Radio Network is a thinking person's network for our world's progressive visionaries and stakeholders and great thinkers to assemble on a commercial-free and listener-supported network. Our provocative hosts speak freely and passionately on intriguing and urgent topics such as health and news and politics and women's issues and philosophy and more that directly impact our lives. Progressive Radio Network takes chances. Our voices and ideas are not always welcomed by corporate media, so Progressive Radio Network is a very important outlet for these great thinkers.
Hey, it's Jesse, PRN station manager. I have an exciting announcement for our amazing listeners. PRN has a new voicemail line that will allow you to connect better with our hosts. If you can't listen live but have a question or comment for one of our hosts, just call 862-800-6805. That's 862-800-6805. This feature will allow your voice to be heard on your favorite PRN show.
Thank you for listening to the Progressive Radio Network.
Light Treason News, hosted by Allison Kilkenny, interviews fascinating people and wild characters in this political comedy podcast. So tune in Thursdays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network for pop culture,
Sacha Baron Cohen dresses up as different characters and interviews people. And sometimes they're just like average Americans, and sometimes they're really, really famous politicians and personalities.
Politics?
But we know this song and dance, right? It was called Triangulation during the Clinton years.
Yeah, and it was how we ended up destroying a bunch of the social safety net.
And a sprinkling of treason.
Light Treason News on the Progressive Radio Network.
Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani and Aikmi on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride talking about her GAPS diet and how she treats children with autism using this diet and has had such great success. And I'm so excited to be sharing this with all of you. So, Dr. Campbell, can you tell us a little bit about the GAPS diet? What does it entail? What is it? And is it a diet that once children go on it and get better, is it something that they have to stay on for life? Or is it something that you then can wean off of and slowly introduce other foods?
The GAPS diet is based on traditional diets all over the world. The way our grandmothers used to cook, or great-grandmothers used to cook, and everything is prepared at home. Nothing is processed. There are no chemicals, no additives, nothing bought in tins or packets. The shopping list is very simple. We buy everything in the shape and form that Mother Nature created it. If it's been processed to any degree, we do not buy it. We remove all the foods which are difficult to digest and which challenge the digestive system of the person and which will not allow it to heal and which feed the pathogenic microbes in the gut. And that is all grains, whether they're gluten-free or not gluten-free, it doesn't matter. In fact, GAPS diet is truly gluten-free because we eat no grains of any description. All starch is out, which means not only grains, but potato family is out. Potatoes, sweet potatoes, yams, gerusalem, artichokes, and so on are out. And most beans are out, leguminous, because they're high in starch. We do not eat sugar. We do not eat any processed substances. So all the food is made at home from fresh ingredients. The whole diet, the whole protocol, GAPS nutritional protocol, is described in detail in my book, Gut and Psychology Syndrome. It's a self-help book. Millions of people around the world just bought the book. They didn't have any consultations with anybody. Just followed the book and got the results. And I receive endless letters from people with fantastic success stories in every conference I go to. Almost always people come to me and tell me about their success stories, how they have recovered. The basis of the diet are meat stocks, not bone broth, please, meat stock. That is described how to cook it in my book, how to make it. Because what we do for our children and for our adults as well, because GAPS diet is not only successful for learning disabilities in children, it is very successful with allergies, with autoimmune diseases, with fibromyalgia, myalgic encephalomyelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, multiple sclerosis, all these kind of disorders, with psoriasis, with various skin disorders, with chronic cystitis, with all kinds of physical conditions. Because Hippocrates has made this statement all those thousands of years ago, that all disease begins in the gut. And the more we learn with our modern clinical experience and scientific tools, the more we realize just how correct he was. Indeed, every disease, physical or mental, begins in the digestive tract. And GAPS nutritional protocol is very successful at healing the gut, rebuilding the gut, healing all the holes in it, healing and sealing the gut wall and changing the gut flora. A very important another aspect of the gut and psychology diet, of GAPS diet, are fermented foods. We make our own fermented foods at home, which are very important because fermented foods are teeming with beneficial microbes, which are necessary and essential to rebalance the gut flora. We want beneficial bacteria in there, and not just bacteria, because naturally fermented food will have fungi in it and will have all kinds of a whole community of wonderful microbes that will be coming in for the person, fermented foods. Besides, fermented foods are pre-digested. They're easy to digest. for our digestive system, because when we ferment the food, the microbes pre-digest it for us and release the nutrition into the whole mixture for us. So that's another very important aspect of GAPS diet. Another very important aspect, that it is fairly high on animal fats. Human body requires large amounts of fats, because when we take water out of human body, about 70% of human body is water. The dry weight is about 50-50, protein and fat. And when we analyze that protein in laboratory, we find that in its biochemical structure, it's very similar to proteins from meat, fish, eggs, and dairy. We eat only fermented dairy. In the GAPS nutritional protocol, pre-digested dairy, properly fermented at home. So casein is broken down, and there's no need to worry about casein for these people. So,
can you explain what pre-digested dairy is? Is that cheese? What do you mean?
It is homemade yogurt, homemade kefir, homemade cottage cheese, homemade sour cream, homemade ghee. So we pre-digest. We don't drink milk as it is. We pre-digest it. There's a lot of information in my book on how to produce properly fermented products at home. So there are a lot of nuances to that. So that's a very important part. When we analyze the fats in the human body, we realize that in their biochemical structure, they're very similar to fats in lamb, beef, pork, goose, duck, and cream and butter. So GAPS diet, we are building the gut wall for the person, because human body doesn't waste resources on healing a sick cell or a sick tissue. It kills that cell, removes it, and replaces it with newly born baby cell. In order to give birth to trillions of cells to rebuild your gut wall, we're building new gut wall for the person, basically. We're not healing the existing gut wall, we're building a new one. In order to build a new one, we have to have building resources. Building materials are required to give birth to trillions of new baby cells. And GAPS diet provides, it's a nutrient-dense diet. It provides dense amounts of building materials to build a new gut wall for the person. That's a very, very important point. And fats are 50% of the dry weight of the human body. And a majority of these fats have to come from animal foods. So GAPS diet requires good amounts of animal fats. And that is fats coming from meat, from dairy, from animal sources. Of course, many people were asking me the same question when I would start talking about fats to them, about the heart disease, because we live in a world of fat phobia and cholesterol phobia. So to explain all of that, I have written a book called Put Your Heart in Your Mouth, What Really Causes Heart Disease and What We Can Do to Prevent It and Even Reverse It. And in that book, I explain what really causes heart disease, and it is not animal fats and not cholesterol. There is now a lot of information now coming out that there's nothing wrong with eggs and butter, that they do not cause heart disease. In fact, they prevent it. So if you're interested in that subject, please read that book. The book is written in an easy-to-understand way, but it is fully referenced for professionals and for scientifically-minded people. Another aspect I would like to touch on is that animal products are very important to eat for on the GAPS nutritional protocol. We live in a world of nutritional misinformation, and the prevailing dogma and propaganda now is pushing the whole humanity towards vegetarianism. The whole propaganda is based on emotions. It's very, very emotional, and on ignorance, on misinformation. I have seen so many anorexic girls, bipolar young people, people with other mental illnesses, who became ill because of misguided vegetarianism, particularly veganism. And that spurred an intense study on this subject. And very quickly, I discovered that there is no science to rely upon for us on that subject, that all the so-called scientific studies published are incorrectly designed, incorrectly analyzed, incorrectly conducted, because they were conducted by the pro-vegetarian lobby. One of the particularly fraudulent studies is the China study. Nobody should trust that, definitely. And so I looked, having realized that, I've started looking at the basic sciences, the sciences of biochemistry, biology, zoology, and other basic sciences, physics, and clinical experience, because there's a lot of clinical experience accumulated by a medical profession on this subject. And based on that, I've written a book called Vegetarianism Explained. making an informed decision, where I explain how animal foods work in the human body and how plant foods work in the human body. And where I explain that human beings can live perfectly well without plants altogether. Indeed, I have a growing group of patients, particularly severe end of patients, patients with ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, FPIs, babies with FPIs, it's a terrible disorder, people with severe mental illnesses, adults, who live on a no-plant gaps diet. They eat no plants at all. They thrive, they're beautiful, they come off medication, they recover, these people, rosy cheeks, bushy tails, excellent, excellent progress. Many of them, when they try to introduce even a tiny amount of any vegetable matter, they regress. They just cannot eat any plants. And it's this group of patients that taught me that human beings can live perfectly well entirely without plants, just on animal foods. However, my clinical experience have conclusively proven to me that human beings cannot live without animal foods. They cannot live on plants entirely. Veganism is not a diet. It is a form of fasting. If you talk to any Hindu people, they will tell you that it is a fast, veganism. I went to India some years ago, and I met a group of Hindu pilgrims who were traveling from to their sacred sites. They wear special clothes, these people, so you can see them. And the guide told us that part of their pilgrimage is a 42-day fast. So the next day, as it happened, I had the chance to talk to one, to a group of these pilgrims. And I've asked them, what kind of fast is it? And they told me that it's basically Western veganism. They eat grains, beans, nuts, vegetables, fruit, vegetable oil, bread, all the plants, but they're not allowed to eat any animal foods. And these people said that it's very difficult for them and that they will not do it longer than 42 days and that it is a fast. That's how it's been called for thousands of years in the Hindu tradition. So veganism is not a diet, it is a fast. And I have seen far too many young people who destroyed their lives through misguided veganism. Because veganism, plants do not feed the human body. Plants are cleansers in their nature. This is due to the fact, to the way human digestive system is designed by Mother Nature. Please read my book. There are good pictures there. It's all explained very well in there. So the conclusion of that is that animal foods are the feeding, building foods for the human body, while plants are cleansers. They do not feed the human body. They just keep us clean on the inside. Many people in our world are toxic, overweight. They accumulated large amount of toxicity in their bodies. So when they go on a vegan protocol, on a vegan fast, they feel better in the first few weeks because a cleaner body feels better than a toxic one. But then at a certain point when the body has finished cleansing, it would give the person a signal. I finished cleansing now. I'm hungry. Feed me. The way the body will give you that signal, it'll give you a desire for a piece of meat, for a pot of cream, for a piece of cheese, for fried eggs or something else like that. But problem is many people in our world follow veganism for emotional reasons, for religious reasons, for ethical reasons and so on. And they override that signal. They don't listen to their body. They force it to continue cleansing when the body needs feeding. And that is the moment when the body starts breaking down less important tissues, such as muscle and bone, to feed more important organs, such as the brain, the heart, the lungs, the liver. And the body starts starving, cannibalizing itself, and the person starts developing chronic disease. And the problem is, because the brain is starving, these people degenerate in their mental capacity. They're unable to perceive what's happening to them very often. And there are many, many problems happening in that area. So please read that book in order to understand the whole subject fully. Mm-hmm. To answer your question about how long a person should be on the GAPS nutritional protocol, the standard length is 2 years minimum. But for many people with more severe conditions, such as a recovered autistic child or a person with mental illness who has recovered, a schizophrenic, for example, or a bipolar person, or a person with epilepsy, or a person with Crohn's disease, or ulcerative colitis, or fibromyalgia, or multiple sclerosis, or another very serious condition. These people recover. They recover fully. But then they have to stay on the GAPS diet for the rest of their life. It is a very nourishing diet. It's easy to cook on it. It's easy to follow it. And it prevents all the modern diseases of aging in people. Mm-hmm. You will have very mm-hmm. graceful aging if you stay on that diet and prevent any kind of relapses.
Mm-hmm. And do you specify what type of meat? I mean, we all know all meat is not created equal. Animals that are fed, in the industrial world, animals that are raised in a CAFO or confined animal feeding lot is not going to be have the same nutritional value as animals that are grazing on grass and out in nature. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Of course. All the food in our supermarkets, most food in our supermarkets, comes from industrial agriculture. Industrial agriculture. That agriculture exists for profit. Your health is not on its agenda. All kinds of things. It is so sophisticated. It's just staggering. Absolutely amazing how sophisticated it is. And I do not recommend that people buy their food from supermarkets. Do not buy it from supermarkets. There are many, many, you'll be surprised to know that 75% of humanity on our planet are not fed by industrial agriculture. They're not eating.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm sorry, they're playing this music. I think we are out of time.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
Read my books, and all the answers are there.
And I will share your information on my website and spread it far and wide for people to find you. Because I know those that have autistic children really want to find you. Anyway, everyone for joining me, thank you for listening. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll see you again next week. Bye for now.